And we are live now for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winchell. How's it going today, Seth?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. Big week of news, and we're going to go with do it a little bit chronologically this week, because right after last week's podcast, there was some Model Y news that was significant. So we're going to start with that, even though it's almost a week old at this point. First off, Tesla changed the price of the Model Y. They got a decent price drop here on two different levels. Really, there was two major change to the configuration, the online design studio, I should say. So now the price of the base version of the Model Y, or the cheaper that you can buy today, which is of course the dual motor long range, just dropped by $3,000. So a significant price drop below $50,000, so basically $50,4900.
That means I get $3,000 off. Not bad.
Yeah. I mean, everyone that's have a car on order right now hasn't taken delivery yet, get the price. So I know you're taking delivery this weekend, so you're $3,000 richer than you.
Well, I'm actually $4,000 poorer.
That's right. You decided to maximize that $3,000.
Yeah, I still got. They still had $7,000 for the full self-driving, so I bit the bullet. And I know I'm going to be hating myself for the first couple of years, but you know, I'm doing it for the team. I'm doing it for the research. You know.
Well, yeah, because I have it on my Model 3, but my Model 3 being in Canada always gets the software update later. So it's good that we have one in the US now, because I don't think any other team member on Electrek got the FSD. I was the only one dumb enough to do it, right? I think Jamie doesn't have it on his Model 3.
No, I don't think anybody else got it. And that was basically based on our recommendations not to do it. So
yeah. Well, also to be fair, I bought my Model 3 back when there was enhanced autopilot, and I definitely wanted enhanced autopilot, so I bought that. And I didn't buy FSD right away when I ordered a car, but then there were a discount at one point, and I ordered that discount. So I think I got it like fairly cheap.
Yeah.
It's hard to say exactly how cheap, because again, I bought the autopilot enhanced autopilot 2 that was also more expensive. Now autopilot, the base autopilot auto steer is included in the price. So I mean, I would have to really do some research to actually know how much I paid for the FSD as it is today, since it incorporates a lot more feature. But I don't think you never even have enhanced autopilot, did you? Or did you have it on your Model 3?
On the Model that, no, not on the Model 3. I don't even have regular autopilot on the Model 3. But on the Model X, I have full autopilot.
Okay, like, yeah.
Which, by the way, my Model X, I think I have an MCU issue now. I haven't had a screen for like the last 3 days. And I've tried all the like serious like 3 minute hold down the things with the brake.
All right, let's talk about that, because I just had the same issue. Literally like an hour ago, my girlfriend goes to take the Model X. She gets into the car, start the car. And to be fair, this is the first time we had an issue with the Model X. She goes to enter the pin, the drive pin, and she enters the first three numbers, and then the pin, like entering like window, it freezes, but the rest of the MCU works. So you can close down the pin, but then you cannot drive the car, because if you put it in drive again, the windows pop up, the pin drive windows pop up. You can enter three numbers and not the last one. Makes no sense whatsoever. Then, so I decided I'm going to do, looks to be an issue with the MCU. So I'm going to do a reset of the MCU, but then I do the double scroll reset and it shuts down the MCU, but doesn't open it back up. So now I don't have the MCU.
So there's a way to, there's like a hard reset of the MCU, which takes like 2 or 3 minutes, and you have to have the breakdown. You push both the buttons and you hold it there for like literally 2 minutes. Okay. And then sometimes that brings it back up. I've been kind of living off that for like the last couple of days. Like every time I start the car, it's dead and I have to do like 2 minutes of that. But today, I was just at a New York Power Authority event, the first charging center in New York. And I was like, I couldn't get it up. So I just drove all the way up there with my, you know, my phone. I turned on the air conditioning with my phone.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. I cannot even do that because I still don't have the Model X on my account. Like Tesla is being a nightmare to deal with a transfer of ownership. Like their online system to transfer ownership asks for like both sides of the title, but then there's not two places to open both sides of the title. So then I can only upload one side. Then they send me an email like, we refuse it because you only have one side. Reapply, but with the other side. So I do that, and then they send me an email. Well, you just put the back side. Now we need the front side. But I just did another application with the other side. It's maddening, maddening. Anyway, I have to retry that because now. So this show like one of the big weaknesses of Tesla's new service approach because. What can I do now? So you cannot even get someone on the phone at your service centers nowadays.
Oh no way!
You have to go through the app. To put an application, I don't have the car on my app.
Right. So, but you have two other cars on your app.
I have two other cars on my app, but two other cars that are registered in Canada. So if I apply for a service appointment on it, it applies for a service appointment in Canada and not with the right car. I mean, I'm sure I could just show up with another car and be like, hey, he had time. Like he set up the time, but this is not like, so yeah, this is a big weakness. So I'm gonna try your trick. So you said a scroll for 2 minutes while holding on the brakes.
The brakes, yeah.
Okay.
And you also have to, before you do that, you have to reboot the front thing with the, you know, the two up buttons at the same time.
Oh, I didn't do that.
Yeah, you got to reboot the up thing and then the other one, and then sometimes it works.
And to reboot the dash screen?
Yeah, the dash screen. That's the up. Both up buttons at the same time for
the instrument cluster. So over the scroll, the two button over the scroll, you hold that and you reset it. All right, I'm gonna try that after the show. All right, let's go back to the Model Y here. The base version or the current base version, $3,000 cheaper, and they changed the packaging for the performance version where you could still do like you used to for the Model 3, basically get a stealth Model Y performance. So Model Y with the faster acceleration, but without all the other things like the 21-inch wheels and the performance brake and the suspension and whatever. Now you cannot anymore, just like you cannot anymore on the Model 3. So they are sort of normalizing the lineup here. Nothing too surprising. But yeah, so the biggest thing is a $3,000 price drop. But then we learned something else about the price of the Model Y is that I'm having some issue with the page here. Page is not updating for some reason. All right, well, I'm going to try to go it by memory then. by memory, it's I'm sure it's going to update in a second. But Elon basically said that, what happened now?
So basically Tesla canceled the cheapest Model Y.
Yeah, well, we thought that the Model Y, I mean, based on Tesla's own, like, it gets a little bit weird because when Tesla first announced the Model Y, they talked about the standard range Model Y, just like back then we were talking about the standard range Model 3, but then Tesla did the whole thing where they, what they did with the Model 3 standard range is controversial to a degree, but, you know, now it's a half the menu item, it's still available, but the cheaper official Model 3, I'd say, is the standard range plus. But Tesla, on the website, was still talking about a standard range Model 3, a Model Y. We all assumed that that would not happen and Tesla would then still release a standard range Model 3, a Model Y. Standard range plus Model Y, excuse me. Now it sounds like that's not in the plans anymore. Elon said that it won't be a standard range, or I assume that also includes standard range plus Model Y, because it says that the range would be too low. Said the range would be less than 250 miles EPA. Which doesn't sound that bad to me, but apparently sounds bad to Elon. And instead, he said that Tesla will release a long-range rear-wheel drive version of the Model Y. So that's basically the original Model 3 was a long-range rear-wheel drive. Tesla discontinued that version of the car, though they relaunched it in China, but never relaunched it in the U.S., North America. So that was a weird move. But now they are relaunching that powertrain for the Model Y, which... I mean, it's really strange to me because like the powertrain is one of the big component share that the Model Y and Model 3 share. and now they are making a powertrain version that's not the same. So it is a little bit strange, but technically that's now going to be the cheapest and longest range version of the Model Y. So that's interesting on its own. Really makes the lineup a little kind of weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of fills it out, I guess, a little bit, but it doesn't. There's no, I mean, on the Model Y, there's not a very inexpensive. I think Tesla has the Model 3 as the least expensive. They don't really want you to pass up a Model Y, or sorry, they don't want an inexpensive Model Y. They kind of want you to spend a little bit more on the Model Y. Mm-hmm. What is the current split? So we don't know what the rear wheel drive Model Y is going to cost, but now with $3,000,
well, he didn't hint at $45,000. Like that's
Elon's he did one of his eye things, right?
Yeah, that's one of his new things on Twitter. Like if someone says something but doesn't want to confirm it, it just puts eyes on them. Like
all right. That's good because you know you can change it or whatever. It's not like a. But all right, so 40. What is it? 45,000.
Yep.
And then the base model, Model 3, long range, rear wheel drive. What is the base price of that?
Oh no. It has to be a little bit cheaper. Not that much, I think, though.
But it's like I think 3,000 cheaper or something.
Maybe it won't be. No, actually, probably it's not cheaper because it the cheapest long range version of the Tesla has the dual motor. So
that's right.
It actually might be like the same price. Like, let me see here. Purchase price
$37,900 is.
No, it's $47,000.
That's standard range plus. Oh yeah, long range.
So it is more. It would be more expensive because of the dual motor, which is like that's where to make the lineup a little bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it makes sense though. Like you know, you want the Model Y, you want to pay a little bit more. It's got some extra stuff, more room.
But I would just launch the rear wheel drive long range on Model 3 too, and make it cheaper on Model Y.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah, if the powertrain is already being made in Fremont for this one or Gigafactory in Nevada. I don't know.
They're making it in China.
And they are making it in China. That's right. All right. This one was interesting a little bit. Former VP of quality at Tesla, he released a blog post and it gave us some very interesting insight in Elon's strategy. We're talking about Philip Chain, and he worked at Tesla a while ago, to be fair. Like he hasn't been in Tesla in like 7 years or something, but he did share a few interesting anecdotes about how Tesla would turn things around very quickly. They would modify parts extremely quickly, and sometimes they would they wouldn't be as rigorous on the testing. Well, they would be actually as rigorous on the testing. It's just that it didn't matter if the testing wasn't done by production. I mean, he shared this. Let me quote this here from a conversation with Elon. Another good example is the long-term durability evaluation of the car here being the Model S. When I discussed it with Elon, I told him our engineer's calculation led to at least 1 million equivalent miles of driving required before launching the car, a six-month phase required to discover potential weaknesses and fix them. My request was actually very limited in regards to the industry practice. German manufacturer don't release a car that has not clocked 10 million kilometers or and 2 winters. Elon, in a customary laconic way, answered, "Okay, do it, but we're not delaying the launch date for it." Then Chain answered, "But we might encounter an issue that will require some modification of the production model." He says, "Yeah, I know, but we will make the changes afterwards if we have to. Even if it involves a recall, some cars, as Chains and Elon respond, "Yes, and for the rest, we will adjust by pushing some OTA upgrades, so over the years, software upgades." And I mean that's telling a lot right here. And funny enough, that interview is released right after we learned that Tesla is sending a bunch of Model Y to New Zealand for winter testing. So literally like months after production, they're still conducting the winter testing on the car. To be fair, they did some. We already saw some winter testing of the Model Y in Alaska and in Canada last winter. So it's not like they didn't do any winter testing and they're just now doing it. So that would be fair to say that. But it's still interesting that it's still part of, they're still within the test program.
It's now, weird that they send them to New Zealand for testing. I mean, I feel like, they don't even sell them in New Zealand, the Model Y yet. Like,
yeah, but New Zealand is it's summer right now, and summer is the winter there. So
I know, but like, I feel like Argentina or whatever would be a better.
But I think they do have already in New Zealand. They do have a center for that. Like it's already a proving ground there for that. So just like Tesla has one in Alaska. But yeah, it shows basically not much change on that front over the last 7 years.
You know what? I hate to say it, but like that doesn't sound like BS at all. Like it sounds exactly what Tesla's modus operandi is. Like just get them out the door, like the whole, you know, build them in a tent, like let's just get them going and then we'll fix them later.
And the quality issues that we've seen with early production car of both Model 3 and Model Y.
Right.
Kind of explain like it's explained here.
Yeah.
All right. Terra Factory Austin. Another news that we reported last week that we were expecting it to happen. So last week we reported how the school district approved the tax incentive for the factory in Austin. But this is still needed the approval at the county level for the county commissioners for the rest of the incentive. And it was approved. So Tesla now has both the county level, school district level incentive for their tax break on the project, which means that they're basically ready to move forward now. And they might be looking at also maybe a state level incentive. I wouldn't be too surprised if that's the case. We know that Elon has been talking directly with the Texas governor.
Yeah, that guy needs some good news right now. His state is a mess.
And did he also test it for COVID? No, that's the Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, okay. Which is kind of interesting because he was meeting with Tesla one week ago.
Elon, yeah, you met him. Elon. In a kind of also like not really that necessary of a meeting. Like Elon was just like, in the invitation, he literally said like, but for respect, I at least have to meet you guys, like for respect, considering your plan and it like that. That was a weird way to phrase it.
And it was underneath a like Walmart tent. You know, it didn't look like it was planned too far in advance.
Anything like that either.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah. But yeah, now it looks like they're ready to move forward. I would expect an official announcement on the project very soon. And behind the scene, I'm hearing still that Tesla is moving forwards with procurement and looking for contractors and things like that for the factory in Austin. There was another software upgrade this week. Not that much stuff in it, but one thing that I found really interesting, it was like this ridiculously small change, but that really showed Tesla's commitment to efficiency, is they simply changed. They're using the sensor in the seats to detect if there's a passenger on the passenger side. And if they don't detect any passenger, they will shut off the fans in the vent just to have like this minimal energy efficiency gain that you would get from not running those fans, which is pretty crazy. So you still have the same AC setting. So you still have the same thing. It's just that they won't blow the air in the region of the car that there's no one in it. So Tesla, there's a reason why Tesla has a big lead in efficiency, and it's like they're looking at these small things like that, and they are implementing it where they can.
Yeah, so lots of small things.
Yeah. In the update, there was also a few other things. The update, by the way, is 28.2 for people that are getting it. Some UI improvement on Tesla's Sirius XM app. For Model S and X, there are the very high and the high settings on the smart suspension. So that's the more recent Raven cars. Also, some improvement and a few other improvements. Oh, yeah, a bigger one for people that have FSD. Now, if you have auto steer activated with the traffic lights and traffic lights and stop sign control, you are allowed to set the auto steer or the traffic aware cruise control, I should say. Setting 5 miles per hour higher than the speed limit on secondary road, which wasn't the case before. Since, you know, secondary road that they call it. I mean, it's city driving, and that's where the traffic light and stop sign system is useful. But Tesla was limiting it to the speed limit, which of course we know, like, most people don't like to drive the speed limit. They try to drive just a little bit faster. So it made the feature not as useful, but it was early in the release of the feature. Tesla's still trying to implement it as securely as possible. And now they feel secure enough to increase the speed limit a little bit. So that's good news for the development of that feature. All right. Factory shutdown. So we hear from sources that Tesla is looking at doing some pretty significant upgrades in the coming weeks at Fremont Factory, including opening the new 4.5 general assembly line that is in a tent that's being deployed. I think it's almost complete now, that the tent on the west side of the GA4 assembly line. We posted some pictures on Electrek of that new tent that's going up. And there's going to be apparently Tesla has to do some other upgrades related to it to supply them with bodies and everything. Like, there's a new gigapress that's coming to, they're going to have 2 gigapress at the factory now that's going to increase the production capacity of the Model Y and Model 3 and feed those new assembly line back. Because there's also the GA5 line that's coming up that's not under a tent, but actually inside the factory. So that's, I think the factory shutdown, which should happen by the end of the month, would also involve that and might involve a few other things, interesting things that we're going to report over the next few days as we get more information. Stay tuned on that on Electrek, but exciting stuff, secret project kind of stuff. Should be fun. We had also a few other reports on Fremont Factory, especially when it comes to the COVID situation. We reported earlier this week, we got access to Tesla's own data when it comes to COVID-19 exposure at the factory. And it showed that it's clearly spiking in the last few weeks, like a big increase in the last 4 weeks, but especially in the last 2, where Tesla was getting over 200 cases of, they call it exposure, which, my understanding is that they determined that one person, one Tesla worker got the virus, and then they trace back who's been around him at work. And if it's been around him at work at the time that they assumed that they had the virus, then they classify that exposure, but it's not a confirmed case. This actually doesn't have that many confirmed cases, just over 130, but that's still a decent amount. And mostly, again, if you look here, this is the bar for the Fremont factory. So vast majority of the cases are there too. But the other big one is Nevada, Gigafactory Nevada. And I think that's the Cato Road. That's another Fremont facility too that also has a decent number for the size of Fremont. But Fremont factory is where the vast majority of the cases are. The difference is they calculate that over 1,500 employees are affected by the virus, but only 130 tested positive. But that doesn't mean that there's just 130 people that has the virus, because in the test result, the vast majority of employees were not specified whether they had a test or whether we had a result on the test. So that's the big difference here.
I mean, it sounds like these are people that came into contact with people who have the virus and are, you know, sent home for 14 days to quarantine and get tested.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was hundreds of people affected by that are currently in quarantine or have been in quarantine at Tesla. And in Tesla's data, and we reported that in our original report on it, that most affected people seems to have been linked to direct contact outside of work, so they didn't get it at work. But that's just with Tesla itself can prove, at least claims it can prove, because the vast majority of the people that are reported as affected, it's not specified where they get it. The number that did get it at work is extremely low. But again, that's just people that Tesla can actually trace back. So we posted that report because, of course, there's a lot of scrutiny around Tesla and the COVID situation because of Elon's comment on it and because of Tesla's very aggressive stance on reopening the factory. despite the Sutter and Place order. But we tried to be as fair as possible with that report. We had very good data that Tesla isn't sharing with anyone. And even employees have been having issues getting a response from Tesla. So we felt like it was our responsibility to share the data.
Yeah, I don't even think Tesla was sharing that with Alameda County.
Yes, that too. And we reached out to Tesla, of course, before posting it, just to be sure like that we're on the same page. We have that. And do you guys want to comment on that? Put some context or whatever you want. We didn't get a response. We're not surprised by it. Tesla, as far as we know, not only responded to us. Like, people always say, Electrek is anti-Tesla or whatever, and so they don't respond to you. First of all, we're obviously not anti-Tesla. Still on share in Tesla.
Go Tesla.
But it's not just us. Like, for the other journalists from other publications that I know, like, Tesla literally doesn't respond to any inquiries at all. Like, the PR department, from what I know, exists to, like, serve like a few YouTubers that Tesla likes, and that's about it. Like, maybe Jay Leno, manage a Jay Leno relationship, and that's about it. But yeah, so Tesla didn't respond, but then they felt the need to respond to their employees about the report. And so we did finally get a comment from Tesla about the report, but through another leaked email from Tesla, which is kind of crazy. Like, it goes full circle. And in that email, Tesla called, well, I mean, they never directly referenced our report, but we assume that it has to do with the report. They said that it was inaccurate reports. Even though they basically just confirmed the data that we said, they never actually pointed out to anything that was actually inaccurate. They just said, like, we had less than 10 cases of workplace mistransmission, which we didn't dispute. We never said that wasn't the case. But of course, the way they presented the data to the employees here, they presented it in a really rosy way. Where, like, the way they say it is, like, we had very few positive COVID-19 workplace transmission cases, less than 10 globally since January. But what they should actually say is that we had only 10 cases that we could absolutely trace back to workplace transmission. We also have at the current time, we also have hundreds of other cases that we don't know how it was transmitted.
Over 1,000.
It's hard to tell, because they also have cases that, like, that are classified as people affected because they put them in quarantine, but those people tested negative. So
okay.
So those are also counted them. So, like, then those people, you cannot really
say they tested negative, but they're still in quarantine because they might test positive later.
Yeah, because they came apparently to contact at work with someone that had, like, so, but it's really like it's such a complicated situation. Sure. And again, I'm not like hammering on Tesla on this. Like, a lot of people, like, came to me and they were like, yeah, you're anti-Tesla because you just reported on Tesla on that and not the other automakers. And, like, I wish I could report on the other automakers about it, but I got the data about Tesla. Like, I mean, you guys know I'm a Tesla guy. I have a lot of information about Tesla, a lot of close sources at Tesla and everything. So yes, I get the data about Tesla. If I had sources at GM that would leak me that data, I would use that too. And we do know that other plants, other automakers around the U.S. also are having issues with COVID spread since reopening. It's not just at Tesla. But I have the data about Tesla, so I'm going to report about Tesla. So deal with it. And of course, within the context of Tesla being super aggressive about it and Elon sort of downplaying the COVID. That's one thing. Like, I think it would be a lot better approach if Elon was a lot more sensible about the COVID thing, because we even heard, like, he tore the GA4 line in June, and something that he confirmed. And then I talked to some employees that saw him touring the line, and they were like, he wasn't wearing a mask, and his entourage wasn't wearing a mask, which is actually a Tesla guideline to wear a mask. And then in Tesla's guideline, they also say, like, disposable masks are not the best. They don't protect you as much. So they said that they supply the better mask, like the resume. I'm not even sure, but anyway, and they actually don't have enough of them yet, so they're still giving out disposable masks. So they're not even following their own guideline on that. But yeah, I mean, I'm just, I was kind of sad that Tesla took this approach instead of being more open about it. They're just like, ah, the reports are not true. And then they just share the exact same data that we share, but just in presented in a rosier way. Like, all right. Like they tried to calm their employees, I guess. Gigafactory Berlin. We have a look at what it should look like when it's completed. And it looks pretty sweet.
Sure does.
Though will it end up like that? Because I remember 6 years ago when we saw the final render of the Gigafactory Nevada, and 6 years later, and it doesn't look quite like that just yet. So I'm not gonna hold my breath for that one. But to be fair, the Gigafactory
Shanghai
is starting to look a lot more quickly ramps up to what Tesla displayed them just a year and a half ago, really. So I'm hopeful on that. Just over a year ago, really. So I'm really hopeful on that front. And a lot of solar power. I guess that's good. And this kind of strained water feature, or maybe even a pool.
Does look like that. Yeah, like a, for the employee break time.
Yeah, some kind of lounge.
After COVID.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's outside at least, so yeah. I think that's good. I mean, Elon did mention about like making like some kind of club underground at the factory to hold some raves. So maybe decided instead the underground is kind of creepy, and let's do it on top of the factory. That's kind of cool. Pretty excited about that. It should look pretty fun. I'm trying to go back here. All right, that's that one. Oh boy, so I was kind of excited. I see that like the Science Channel has a new show called Super Factories, and the first episode was this week. And during the first episode was Gigafactory Nevada, and we just bitch about Gigafactory Nevada not having expanded a lot lately in the last few years, and the fact too that we just haven't had a good look at the factory in a long time, so we would like to know what's happening. And now Tesla gave exclusive access to that new Science Channel show, so we thought we might see something interesting in there. The segment was pretty bad, like a lot of inconsistencies in it. Like they talk about the Model 3, and they talk about the Model 3, they show the Model S, and then they show the Model X, which makes no sense whatsoever. Then they start calling a Model 3 the M3, which is so annoying, because like when you talk about cars and you talk about the M3, everyone thinks about the BMW. Every car person thinks about the BMW M3, not like Tesla is the Model 3. But yeah, still, we got some footage from inside the factory, some new footage, which was nice. And they even got access to like executive. They got access to Chris Lister, was the number one guy at Gigafactory Nevada. So that we thought they're going to get some good information from that. The only really new information that we got from it was that they said that 30 million individual battery cells are made per day at the factory. So I thought that was interesting, because 13 million battery cell, we estimated the 2170 cells that Panasonic is making there is about 17 watt hour. So if you extrapolate to 13 million cells, that would over a year give you a capacity of around 80 gigawatt hour, which is a lot more than the last production capacity that Panasonic and Tesla disclosed, which I think was 54 gigawatt hour. That would be a big jump. And 54 gigawatt hour would be around 8 million battery cells. So you see, like, it's a big difference. So we posted that in our report in the inside look. But then we talked to Panasonic, and Panasonic was like, no, that's not true. That's not accurate. So then I asked, okay, what's accurate then? And they didn't want to disclose that either. So that's the bummer. We don't know exactly what's going on. But the only new information that Science Channel report had wasn't even accurate. So that was kind of a bummer this week. But I still recommend, still, if you're a big Tesla fan, look at the video, but on mute, because the information they give is useless. But you get some really nice shot of the battery cell production there, and it looks very cool.
What was the number they said? 30 million
cells per day.
That's crazy. That's 347 cells per second.
Yeah, but you remember when Elon said back in 2014 about Gigafactory Nevada.
About the machine gun thing?
Yeah, the cells will come out at the rate of a machine gun, which is about that. So that's what it wasn't crazy.
I think that's a lot faster than a machine gun.
Faster?
Yeah, 350 machine bullets per second?
I don't know.
It's per second, fast. Not per minute.
I would have to look into it. Maybe it's probably faster, but not that much faster. Not like an order of magnitude faster. Like machine guns are fast.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on from Tesla news.
We should do our read.
Real quick. Yeah. Let's thank our sponsor, Blue Yeti.
Yeah. Our sponsor this week is Blue Yeti, just like last week. Blue Yeti is a company highly committed to offering clean, quiet, stable, safe, and efficient portable power stations for home, outdoors, emergency, and medical staff, and more. The company's newest product is the Blue Yeti AC200 power station. The new power station uses LG auto-level battery cells and features a 1,700 watt-hour lithium battery and a continuous AC output of 2,000 watts. Good for refrigerators, TVs. You can get a lot of stuff done with two kilowatts. And that's a 459,000 milliamp hour capacity. The Blue Yeti AC200 includes six 2,000 watt AC inputs, one USB-C 60 watt input with power delivery for USB-A ports, four 12 volt DC inputs, and one RV input, which is like a generator. Mm-hmm. There's also a 700 watt 150 solar input for optional solar panel charging. So you pretty much have everything here. It's the first power station of this size we've seen with two built-in 15-watt wireless Qi charging pads on top, which is pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Yeti gives you enough inputs and outputs to charge up to 17 devices simultaneously while having enough juice to even power your electric motorcycles, scooters, and even an EV like a Tesla to get a quick 11 miles when needed. And quick is relative there.
Yeah.
you can order the new Blue Yeti power station today for a special $1,200 pre-order price before prices increase to $1,800 before the retail launch. Hit the show notes for more info.
Yeah. All right. Moving on from Tesla news, we have the Nissan Ariya actually launched this week. And
It didn't really launch. It's announced.
Announced the production version. I mean, because first of all, I was surprised that they stick to the Ariya name, because Ariya was the name of the concept, but now it's actually the name of the production car, and they reveal the production car. So yeah, you're right. The actual news is they reveal the production car and they reveal the production specs. And a lot of good news here.
Yep.
And the design itself, it's remarkably close to the concept. Like it's sleek. Like it's sweet. Like I mean, Nissan's history with producing good-looking electric cars doesn't exist. the latest Leaf is not that bad, but it's also not this. Like, it's not this at all.
This is a step above for sure. Yeah,
this looks like a luxury car too. Like, it's not like it's a Nissan.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised they didn't go with Infiniti on that.
Yeah, they could have slapped an Infiniti name on that thing. Like, easy. Looks super sweet. I really like the Ariya wheels too. I think it's a very cool design, similar to Tesla. But I think the biggest news is they got rid of the CHAdeMO standard and they're going with a CCS standard and 130 kilowatt capacity CCS standard. Decent, very decent capacity. But the fact that they are compatible with CCS is a big deal here.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a death blow to this CHAdeMO standard in the US and in Europe now. I mean, with the Leafs aging out. What else uses CHAdeMO? Like Mitsubishi Outlander does, that IMEV golf cart thing.
Yeah.
What else? I
think Tesla has the adapter for it.
Yeah, I bet you. I bet at this very moment, there's probably more people using, or there's more Teslas using CHAdeMO than any other car.
That sounds likely. Especially since they never launched in the US, they never launched the CCS adapter. If they would launch a CCS adapter, everybody would just do that instead of...
Yeah, especially if it could go up above 50 kilowatts. I was just at this event and I was charging my Model X with the thing. It got up to 50 kilowatts. I was kind of impressed by that. But
Price. The price starts at $40,000. About what we expected, but that's for the lower battery pack version of 63 kilowatt hour. They're going to have a higher version at 87 kilowatt hour, which is nice to have the option at least. At 87 kilowatt hour, that thing has to get over 300 miles of range. Easy. They say we got the actual dimension of it, and because a lot of people were making it to be a Model Y competitor, and I still think that's probably right, but on the higher hand, lower hand, I should say. And it is a little bit smaller, 2-4 inch shorter than the Model Y. Do we have the cargo capacity and all that?
I don't think they announced that.
Yeah, we don't have that just yet. It's going to have all the e-pedal system that the Leaf already has, and also the ProPilot that we also see in the Leaf, which is similar to the base autopilot system that Tesla has. What's the timing on this thing? It's coming next year, right?
So mid next year in Japan to launch, and then late next year in the US, which is really frustrating because, like, hey guys, Model Y is already on the road. It's a little frustrating that this thing's going to be another year beyond that, beyond right now.
And you said mid year in Japan, and what for Europe and US?
Late next year.
Late next year. And I would assume that they will go Japan, then they will go Europe, and then they will go US. Because I think they want to produce that in US too. They want to produce that at the they're not at Chattanooga. They're in Tennessee, I think.
They're in Tennessee. The battery plant was in Chattanooga, I believe. I don't know. Yeah, it's in Tennessee, I think.
Yeah. Chattanooga, I think it's VW. I might be confusing it with VW. All right, another electric vehicle production version was unveiled this week, the BMW iX3. Though not much new for this one. We already, there was a bunch of leak of the production version, so we already saw the car. Looks sweet. Looks like a BMW SUV.
Yep.
They confirmed the 80 kilowatt hour battery pack, 74 kilowatt hour of usable capacity. They're talking about 286 miles of range, 460 kilometers, but that's WLTP. It's not that powerful. We already knew that, 210 kilowatts of a single motor system. So 0 to 60, you're going to get about 6.5 seconds, 6.8 for 0 to 62. But it's a nice little SUV, really.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of the i3, because you know, the i3 was like the super weird mobile, mm-hmm. and this is the super plain mobile. Like, it's very generic, not generic like in a bad way, but like it just looks like a BMW SUV.
Yeah,
doesn't look like anything special.
We don't have official pricing on that one yet, and the problem with. When you launch an iX3, so you have the X3 too, like everyone's going to compare it to the price of the X3, and it's going to be more expensive, of course. So it's always something to take into account. But I still think that pricing should be too expensive. It's going to be a lower end midsize SUV pricing, luxury midsize SUV. And but it's just coming to Europe and China, I assume, since it's being produced in China. But this is one of the first of those cars that we're going to see now, those electric cars from European automakers built in China but exported outside of China. And it comes at the same time as also Chinese manufacturer looking to enter global market. So that situation is fascinating to me. I'm really, really
excited. Yeah, I think that's going to be the story of the next 5 years. I mean, it's going to be Tesla, obviously. GM and Ford are going to be certainly in the U.S. big. Mm-hmm. But like the big story is like these Chinese automakers that can put out an SUV for like $12,000. Like that somehow is going to upset, like it's going to be a big deal in the US eventually. Yeah. Just like everything else.
You need one to make it work, like to get a good reputation and everything to make it work. And then after that, people will start trusting it. And eventually it's going to be like, I mean, for a while, there wasn't that many Japanese cars in the US that people didn't like to have Japanese cars. And now, I mean, every other car is a Japanese car.
Right.
All right, finally, a quick word on Fisker, because there was a big development in the Fisker story this week. Two things. He said that he's going public. He's doing like a backdoor deals, built a bit like Nikola, where they're doing a reverse merger with a small company that's already listed on the, I think it's the New York exchange they're doing. And that way they're trying to raise some money. We reported, of course, earlier this month that they already secured $50 million, but $50 million in the auto industry might as well be nothing. So they need a lot more money, and they want to do it through a public offering, which is, of course, I don't like that when you have nothing and you're doing a public offering. It's not my preferred way to go on the market, just like Nikola did. But Nikola got a $50 billion valuation out of it. So I'm sure Fisker is looking at that. It's like, me too. But the other big development, and arguably bigger development this week, is that Henrik Fisker said that they want to use the MEB platform for Volkswagen on their electric SUV. And the way he phrased it, like, he wants it to be like a luxury SUV that starts at $30,000, all electric, using the MEB platform. Henrik Fisker has said a lot of crazy things that will never happen, and I think that is might be the craziest one yet, because I mean, Volkswagen doesn't have a $30,000 MEB platform, a car built on the MEB platform. I mean, the ID3, which I assume is a much smaller car than this SUV, and it's not a luxury car either. I don't think it starts at less than $30,000. It starts around $30,000. So how can they do that? I don't know. And also, I would argue, like, the weirdest thing about this whole thing is that, do you remember just a few months ago when Henrik Fisker was saying that he had a solid state battery technology that's going to revolutionize the industry and everything?
Right. And that to me is the warning sign, because he's just basically thrown his drivetrain technology out the window.
Yeah.
With this announcement.
Yeah, this thing that was going to revolutionize the industry, solid state on a much faster timeline than all the serious companies that are developing in them, like all the guys out of Colorado that are doing some great work on solid state. Serious people that, like, it's their entire career is based on solid state, and they're telling you, like, yeah, it's going to come closer to 2025. Yeah, Fisker coming up. Oh, we're going to have it next year, and it's going to be in your phone, in your car, and everything. Now he says, we're just going to use the powertrain made by Volkswagen.
Yeah, it's hard to believe him at this point.
Yeah, but in my view, what makes Fisker now, I mean the Fisker, the company, not Henry Fisker and Son, but what makes a startup, it makes it a car design company. If they're just going to use Volkswagen's platform and build their own car around that, then it becomes a design company. And that's Henrik Fisker's strong suit. I mean, I agree. BMW Z8, beautiful car, one of my favorite design ever. But I mean, and so I see a few media reports, some kind of rumors that Volkswagen was actually considering it, but I wouldn't put too much weight on that. Like, he says that at the same time that he says he's going public, and then the company that he's using to go public, Spartan Energy Acquisition, the stock price spiked over it, and they're talking about a $2.5 billion valuation after the merger or something like that. I'm like, all right. I'm not a stock analyst. I don't do recommendation, anything like that. But personally, I would say it's not a great idea to go into that unless you want to just play the market and like try to get in and get the spike and then get out. But I think that's risky. And I don't do it also day trading like that. So. But yeah, did you have something else?
Yeah, so like, I think we were kind of saying this at the end. This is not a bad strategy for Fisker. Like, this is what probably they should have been doing from the beginning. His strong suit is car design. Clearly, he was all over the place with the powertrain stuff.
Yeah.
This is kind of like a dream scenario where he doesn't have to deal with any of the powertrain stuff. He can make a pretty shell, and he's good. And, you know, maybe get your drive software from Google. You kind of just go shopping for all the other stuff. And so it's not a bad situation to end up in. It's just how we got here is really shady.
But not just how we got here. Like, is it going to happen, actually? Like, my view is, like, Volkswagen has like six different brands dependent on that MEB platform. They're going to need to produce the platform for them. And then you have the deal with Ford. I'm sure Ford is going to have issues getting MEB platform for their own programs in Europe that they want to do,
right?
Because of tight supplies from Volkswagen. And I'm sure that deal is going to get priority on any type of deal that Fisker can secure, if they do secure one. So, I wish he would just like start his own car design firm and get contracts with a few automakers. And and if you want to design like mid-luxury electric cars, then just design that. But he's a great designer. I'm sure a bunch of companies would be more than happy to have him. work on something.
Although he did kind of burn that bridge with Tesla. Like, I don't know if I would hire Henrik when, you know,
he burned a few bridges. I mean, I've heard some story about him at Ford, when Ford owned Aston Martin, and he worked for Aston Martin. I think they sued each other like half a dozen times or something. Might be exaggerating here, but some design that he submitted while he was working at Aston Martin. Then when he started Fisker and other companies. You remember when he was doing this VLLF, was basically like a Fisker Karma, a different version of Fisker Karma with a Corvette motor in it.
Right.
Apparently, Aston Martin didn't like that one. They were like, hey, that's pretty close to the DB10 that we have. I don't know. Anyway. Let's get into the question. If you guys have any right now, put them in the comment section on the right side of the YouTube channel, and we'll try to get to them in the next few minutes.
So Shake and Bake says, good afternoon. Any truth to the rumor that the Model 3 Y will be produced with a 100 kilowatt hour battery by the end of the year? I think Elon debunked that.
Yeah, I think he said no. So they apparently have a Model 3 with that kind of capacity, like in development, but it might be used for something else that we don't know about.
A specialized something. Yeah. All right. Rick Skinta says, interesting that the range for the long range rear wheel drive will be substantially more than 300. Will they bring it back for the 3? The 3 still exists in China, the long range 3.
I wanted to do it. I think it would make sense. I think a lot of people would buy that.
Yeah. 70% of Model Y parts are the same as 3. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why you can do that. Is it that the new batteries are coming and the current Model Y is going to be the new standard range?
It's not that. It's the rear-wheel drive powertrain for Model 3 Model S is more efficient than the dual motor one.
Adam Orta says, does it still make sense for the base CT to have 250-mile range if Elon is saying 250 miles isn't enough for the Model Y?
Oh, good point. I didn't get that comment, honestly. I thought standard range plus would sell just fine at like 240 miles or something like that. Like, I think it wouldn't be a problem at all.
Yeah, I mean, Elon has said publicly 200 miles is kind of I think it's just we want to sell higher end cars, and the lower end doesn't have the kind of margin we like.
I know, check, we always get smashed when we say like the like super long range is not actually that important. We all understand on electric the importance of for electric vehicles in general to have longer range to just dispel the range anxiety myth. That's important. We get it. You need some of the cars like that. But that's already happening. Like, everybody is aiming toward that. I think for the more common sense people that actually like understand all the understand their own needs, really, a lot of them will opt for something cheaper that has shorter range and still cover like all, if not almost all, of their needs.
All right. I just got a text from Tesla about my Model Y trade-in. I was going to reply, but I'm on a podcast. I can't do it now. All right. I think it's Rick Sinta says, I think it's set up for the future. They know the range is going to increase a lot, so the standard now may become the new base. I mean, I guess it makes sense when the battery prices come down a lot. They can raise the base model up a little higher. It also differentiates them from the other companies out there. Star Warsman says the Model Y is similar to the AMC and American Motors car, just electric. My thinking at the time.
That makes no sense to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think he's talking about, what is that AMC? There was an AMC wagon that's, it reminded me of the Jaguar I-Pace. I wrote about how they kind of.
Oh, I have no idea what car.
Yeah, it's an old car from the 80s.
I'm too young.
You're too young.
Sorry,
yeah.
Sorry.
You never rode in the back of an AMC Scrambler or whatever it was. All right. Let's go. My first purple car, paid $2,000 per air leak. Made it sound tough, but man, this guy. All right, we can't take any more of those.
Even the weeds that we don't love. I don't think we need to go there.
All right. Rick sent that AC vent change for someone not in the passenger seat is for only the Model Y or the Model 3 as well?
Yeah, so far I've only seen reports of people reporting they're in the notes for the model, for the updates in the Model Y and the Model 3. And I don't know why that would be, because I think the actual like vent system is the same in Model Y and Model 3 as far as I know. I know the Model Y has the octo-valve and,
right,
and everything, but I don't see how that actually impacts the vents. Anyway, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it already had it. Maybe, I don't know. All right, Brandon Fout says, where are these poor quality Teslas used? Prices should be low, great deals, right?
Well, yeah. when we talk about the interview with the Tesla VP of quality, what Elon said was actually accurate. Tesla does fix the problem. It's just it's not for the larger auto industry. It's not the norm. You don't do that. You want them not to have to fix problem at first, unless you are a car dealer. You love that kind of things. But so they do fix those problems after delivery at some point to service. So I don't think that the bad quality should affect the bad quality of early production shouldn't affect the price that much of used cars.
Yeah, so that's actually a good like wider thing that I don't think we've discussed, but it's a inherent advantage that Tesla has that they own the service centers and the dealerships, because the cars can get all the way to there and they don't. I mean, if like a GM car needed a big overhaul at the dealership, the dealership would charge GM a ton of money.
Yeah.
Whereas Tesla owns that piece, so they can get it at cost, obviously. Mm-hmm. All right. Green Gold says COVID is overrated. I think maybe he means underrated. Mm-hmm. We can't be shut down any longer or we end up in a Great Depression. But I think if we don't take care of COVID, we're going to be in a much worse place. And then, so anyway.
Yeah.
Seath, I mean, that's me. You that's need to you. Get Tesla to force an upgrade. I actually was on the phone with them earlier. They tried and they could not. So they are telling me to go to the station, but joke's on them. I'm turning it in on Sunday without a center stack. And they're going to be like, what's going on?
Well, it's your problem.
Hey, it's your problem now. And then they're going to be like, oh, sorry. Like, I guess we're not going to try to sell you another car. And I'll be like, joke's on you. I already bought another car. Yeah. Oh, well. All right. Brad Sloan, what's the story about Tesla Austin? Fred, what's the story about Tesla Austin?
Well, I think we covered that already. You probably show up in the room after the fact, but it's that the incentive package is secure now, basically. So
you trust the person that it is a done deal.
Yeah. Yeah. My understanding is that things are going to move pretty fast in the next few weeks. Yeah.
The Goland filed what? All right, I'm a little drunk here. Greetings from Spain. Hey, Spain. Hey. Hola. I thought you guys had the scoop on Austin. I want to know, are your source on point? More like more BS. Like Tesla had already bought the land.
So Tesla, like that was misreported. Like Tesla secured the deal for the land. It's just it's an option to exercise it, and they are not going to exercise it until all the incentive package are approved. That's just normal. But it doesn't like the deal is there. Like they cannot change that deal. So after the fact, so it's basically as if it's acquired for them. Like it's just they pull the trigger or not after the incentive package is made. It's all a leverage game at that point. But I've been telling you since a month ago that those deals are basically a done deal. They just need to go through the process. Yeah. You know, I mean, we live in a weird democracy time here. Like the commissioner had a lot of power, but they still had to go through to listen to the population and everything about it. So my understanding is that they didn't change much of their mind. And it shouldn't either. I mean, despite the tax incentive here, the district, the school district, and the county is going to get a lot more taxes on the Tesla than they would out of that concrete plant that is there now.
Yeah, and that's initially. Then you have all the higher paid people, you know, living around there, and all the extra stores and support going up there. So
yeah,
it's a win. So what about the charging? We were talking about the Aria. It's got 130 kilowatt charging, which is not bad. It's kind of in between 100 and 150, obviously. So, you know,
Why it's higher than the Leaf is that with something we skipped, it's liquid cool now. The actual batch pack of the IR is liquid cool, and it's the first Leaf with the first Nissan electric car with a liquid cool. Like Nissan loved the passive cooling for all the.
It was weird because like that was the big knock on Nissan. Like everybody who knew anything about EVs was like, Nissan car is great, BMS is great, everything's good. Passive cooling, that's a nightmare, and you can't charge fast. And if you try to charge fast, the battery degrades. And Nissan would just keep putting out cars with air cooling, and nobody.
It's weird because they did save some money, but not that much. Right. And it's super bad for two of the main things you want in your car: fast charging and long battery life. And it's bad for both of those, which is arguably some of the two most important features in your car.
Yeah. All right. I think it's a good idea for them to let VW build it. Great looking, and VW knows how to build cars. That's talking about the Fisker. Yep.
Yeah. If the deal can happen, I'm not sure it can.
Nikola is tanking on secondary issue.
Was that announced today? I didn't see that. Was that announced today?
I have a feeling once Nikola.
I thought they raised $750 million just a month or two ago, like when they went public. They need money.
Yeah, it's not a good sign.
They didn't get enough. What is it? Is it $1,000 to reserve the Badger or whatever it is?
Do you guys know something about Nahwa Technologies? Never heard of it.
How about that? Rings a bell for some reason, but I cannot pinpoint it.
You're gonna have to be a little bit more specific. Let arts live. The new technology for this automobile has been made electric bicycles more efficient and cheaper. Thank you. All right, we're getting to the point in the comments where things start making less and less sense. There's potentially a big shift to LFP batteries from the likes of CATL due to the 0% cobalt nickel. Where does that leave Panasonic, LG Chem? So we talked about this a little bit last week. The lithium, what is it? I want to say iron phosphate.
I think you're right. Phosphates.
They're not as energy dense as lithium ion batteries, but they are cheaper to make. They don't have cobalt, and what is the other? Their
longevity can be better, apparently, like
safer,
a little safety. Bit. Yeah, if they were punctured, but so yeah, I've been looking into CATL, and I'm impressed. Like the ramp up battery production, like nothing else, like this. No one come like the thing that come closest to it is Gigafactory Nevada and Panasonic. I've never seen anything like it.
All right, we got more motorcycle folks. I use Brad Sloan. I use LiPo battery to power my trolling motor on my sailboat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we got to get more into boats. Sporting the mission. Yes, Fisker designed the cars and let somebody else who knows how to build. All right. Brad Sloan is pretty hung up on Gigafactory often. I think he probably bought some property in Tulsa. He's a little stressed out right now.
I think something could still happen in Tulsa too, though. Like they were so strong about it that we know.
It's important to remember the backstory. Gigafactory Nevada was almost in Austin. Austin was the runner-up so the next factory might be in Austin. They might just be playing ahead. All right. I ordered a Model Y on July 11th and already have a VIN and should hopefully take delivery next week. Actual turnaround times seem way lower than the 4 to 8 week Tesla is saying. Well, that is good for you, but for me, it took me like a year.
You can get lucky on that too. Like it might just like be actually an inventory car that was already made that just match. It's still a new car. I'm saying like it's still a new car, but it's one that's already produced and it just matches your specs. So they deliver it to you faster.
Remember Elon said the base model Cybertruck wasn't getting as many pre-orders. Maybe that has to do with
that's
the
fair.
250 range.
Yeah, but that also have to do with the massive spec bump for the price of just $10,000 difference. Like there's such a big spec bump from the dual motor version. So
yeah,
they made it
all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
All right. Fisker got all the original hardware karma off Chevy Volt. If karma happens to Fisker on the first car, burned to the ground, quite literally. The current car is going to wind up in the ocean. All right, more
Fisker. I think that's the play on the car being called Ocean, and I think a lot of Fisker burned down after they were flooded.
Right, were Sandy. Flooded.
Yeah, and Sandy, yeah.
All right, 200 miles is okay if you live in the city, but you need at least 300-mile range if you live out in the country. More range will widen the market for EVs. I don't necessarily agree with that. It might be helpful, but if there's fast charging everywhere, 200 miles is fine.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I think people are a little bit like, who drives 300 miles a day? I don't know who does that. Doesn't seem like a good way to live. Hmm. All right. Garth Woodworth, regarding Twitter, Elon would be too savvy to use DMs for sensitive info. Even so, you would not want everything in his DM history to be made public. Tesla Q would love it.
Oh, is he referencing the act this week? We didn't talk about that much. We reported on it on Electric when it happened, because like it happened with Elon first, but it ended up being a much broader hack of Twitter itself and involving like hundreds of accounts. So 130 accounts, if I remember.
Yeah.
So it's not really like Tesla related that much.
Yeah. I mean, if he got the DMs, he would have got this one, right? Mm. Yeah, maybe not. All right. Next one. Which of the new non-Tesla electric cars are profitable? If not profitable, then just a compliance car. What does that mean?
Nissan always made it clear that they want to be profitable on the electric car, and I think they already were on the Leaf, so I would assume that they're going to be on the Ariya. VW also made it clear that the MEB is not compliance. They want to make money on it. Mackey should be profitable from Ford. I think the hero of the compliance car is coming to an end, really.
Right. Shake and bake. Hopefully the New Zealand winter testing will identify any heat pump issues before the winter starts here in the States.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Agree on range. Tampa to Fort Lauderdale is 3.5 hours, and I hate stopping. Real world range is not 300 when you drive with an AC on and real 75 plus highway speeds. I'll never buy another one unless it's 400 miles. All right. There's your outlier.
They are a few outliers, but 400 miles of range, how many times you do tempo in Fort Lauderdale? Like you just stop for like 20 minutes and get yourself like a coffee or something. It's not the
end. Yeah, and like I just feel like that's not a great way to live your life.
If you're 3.5 hour nonstop, it's a long time.
Yeah. All right. Regarding short range EVs, I agree with for most cases, but our little family just went on a road trip, and my SR Plus didn't work since we had to do a lot of short distance trips once there. No supercharger for 100 kilometers.
Yeah, there's still a few black zones that there's nothing in there, but that's a problem that's going to be solved over time in the next few years.
Yeah. All right, 100% Rick. I don't know what that is. Brad Sloan, Tesla was still saying yesterday the Austin City Council, they are still talking to other people on locations. What are they still trying to leverage? I think they're just trying to get that final package together.
Yeah, there might be a state level package that we don't know about. That might be it. But yeah, I'm still convinced that site, or at least there's also another site too in Williamson County, a little bit north, if I remember correctly, a little bit north of Austin. They also have a good site there that they have an option to buy there.
Oh, interesting. So they could be playing one site off the other site, maybe.
Yeah, but I think they want that site close to the airport. I think that's what they really want.
No live in Austin, and we could use some good news.
No, he means because you speculated that he might live in Tulsa. That's where he's being about it.
Okay.
He says, no, he actually lives in Austin.
Any progress on cameras for side mirrors?
I haven't heard much about that in the U.S. It's legal in Europe.
Yeah, the Audi e-tron has a nice system. Yeah. Play around with
Honda,
it.
The Honda E2 is really nice. How they do it.
All right. That's it.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Thanks so much for listening on your podcast app. Give us a thumbs up and subscribe. That always helps up. You can give us a 5-star reviews on your podcast app. That's always a big help for us. We love talking to you every week, and we're going to be back same time, same place next week. Ciao.